Hey everybody, I'm Jaquaya Wilson, an advocate, a professional, and alumni of the child welfare system. This is the first episode of the Unlearning of Child Welfare, brought to you by the Institute for Family. In the fall of 2020, I hosted a three-part webinar series on the very topic of this podcast name. It's an important conversation, so we turned it into a podcast for students to inspire America's next generation of professionals to improve outcomes for families. In this first episode, Sandra Gonzalez, Vice President of the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and I facilitate a conversation with leading professionals about their origin stories and why it is important for them to advance family well-being in their work. You'll hear from four others: Sharonda Sullivanoff, Public Policy Director at the Children's Home Society of Washington; Melissa Merrick, the CEO of Prevent Child Abuse America; Matt Anderson, the director at the Institute for Family; and lastly, you'll hear David Kelly, the special assistant to the Associate Commissioner of the Children's Bureau. See you at the end of the dialogue and enjoy. The Institute is a brand new platform where parents and professionals can come together to elevate family well-being, not just families within the child welfare system, but all families. We envision a future where we have dramatically reduced our over-reliance on foster care and families are thriving. I want to take a few seconds to really explain how important today's conversation is. With our current focus on child safety as a main priority, our system has not prioritized family well-being. While our objective is to keep children safe, we neglect to listen to family voice, missing their experience and what they can teach us. We believe that family well-being should be at the center of the conversation. Today, we will talk about why we need to advance a family well-being focus and how we can believe in and empower families. I'd like to kick it off and pass it to our co-host, Ms. Sandra Gonzalez.
Thanks. And let me just say, I love being a co-host with you. It's an honor. I've been thinking a lot about what you're trying to accomplish at the Institute for Family and what you said about communication and family. And I wanted to just say a little bit about why I come into this work the way that I do, because you mentioned the word ally, and I appreciate that. That means a lot to me. And I do see myself that way. And on any given day, I might fall short of being an ally, but I sure will always put myself out there to be an ally for youth, for children, and for families. And the way I come to this work really is from a shattered dream that I had, which was I originally decided to be an outpatient therapist decades ago. And my first caseload was with youth, children, and parents who had been separated. And so at the age of 20-something, I was sitting in four walls in an office counseling families who had gone through some pretty significant challenges. And I was shattered by the stigmas that we were required to put on families and the children when there was so much more social context that was missing. And the reasons that they might be depressed or traumatized were less about the reasons they became separated to begin with. It was about the harm that was being done through the system by keeping families apart. But the thing that always has struck me is the resilience and the strength that families brought into that office and bring every day as they're experiencing the system. And what I experienced decades ago in that role in a different state, that's all in my rearview mirror. But what is in front of us today really is the same. It's pretty similar. And we have to change that. And that's my why.
Wow, Sandra, thank you so much for laying that out and for being willing to help facilitate this conversation with me. I think for me, the why really takes part in how I was raised and the things that I saw within my own family. Now that I'm a little bit older, I have two dogs and how I communicate with them is really important. They're just a small part of my family, but they really are who I consider to be my family. And so I've been learning how to train and how to communicate. And I think today here on this platform, we'll have some very interesting guests who can explain to us and share their experiences to their why they're here today to have this conversation with us. I've shared a little bit about why I'm here today, and I want to share just a little bit more as we dive into our panelist responses. So I really want to learn today how I can change, like I said, my own family's future. I want to break those generational curses of lack of communication. When tragedy struck and hit my family, we in part failed to stay connected due to the lack of communication. And so when I have children, I want to make sure that they're equipped with the skills that they need to not just survive during tragedy, but to really thrive and to be well off even after. So with that, I want to really focus on why we should move towards child and family well-being system. What are the benefits? So I'm going to ask our first panelist, Sharonda. What is the foundational experience that taught you that we need to build something new that focuses on prevention and addressing the conditions that family face?
Well, first thing, I'm just going to start off by saying language matters. And we have this system in place that says child welfare. So from the onset, you can disregard me as a person who needs care, because we're saying that the child needs to be the focus and the center. A family well-being system essentially says, we're going to look at the whole family. Family is sacred, and it means something to each and every one of us, and it looks different to every one of us. And so my experience has really taught me that, you know, I came from some conditions that were not necessarily favorable to healthy development, but it doesn't mean that I don't have redeemable qualities and I don't have strengths and beauties about who I am, even coming from those conditions. As I look at us moving towards a family well-being system, what I recognize is that we see worth in each and every person in that family. I'm always baffled, right, the way that the system operates, because I wonder how we instill hope and worth in children when we remove them out of everything that they've ever known. And I question, if you don't have worth for my family, how do you have worth for me? And I think that there's those unsaid messaging that we don't necessarily want to confront, because we have a way of seeing that we've done something good by removal. Your data says something completely counter to that. And so as we move towards a child and welfare being, what I'm recognizing is that we want to really keep each member, siblings, aunts, uncles, community members at the center of our work. We recognize that each person has an importance and value. We want to have that be a reminder. And as we move towards the center of family well-being, I want to just say we have to really recognize the conditions. And are the conditions that folks are living in, does that support well-being? And if it doesn't, how are we moving towards that? So historically, we have very little investment in families. We have a high end of investment on the other end of rehoming families and putting them in places so that they can receive those supports there. So as we move towards a family well-being system, what I can tell you is that we should be really focused on our investment, keeping families together, knowing that each person has an important role in the development and overall societal importance. And we want to really start to generate that for not just the family, but society as a whole.
Wow, it's powerful. And Melissa, would you like to respond?
I would love to. And actually, I just want to pick up on something that Sharonda said, and it's the word conditions, because I agree that language matters, but it's important that we understand too what conditions we're talking about. I think so often we think about physical conditions without thinking about the sociopolitical conditions. Mm. We know that there are some policy strategies that help children and families reach their maximum health and life potential, and others that really just don't do good enough. So I came to this work really similar to kind of what Sandra shared, but my PhD is in child psychology. I was on a postdoctoral fellowship in a child protection team and I was a young mom. I had a 9-month-old baby, so probably had my own mental health things going on in that time, but had lots of support around me, had family close by, had resources, other kinds of conditions that probably supported me and my family. And into my office came a young family, probably teen parents, a 9-month-old baby. And the 9-month-old baby had some bruising. And I was just struck by the fact that this family had touched many other systems before, that we could have prevented this harm from occurring in this family had we had a child and family well-being system, had we not been a system that only once this young family found themselves in crisis could we provide services, or were they identified? And this was a family who only spoke Spanish, had no family close by, Mom was working two or three jobs. Dad was unemployed. So many challenges that really made me understand that families cannot solve these challenges on their own, right? This is all of us together across sector, across community, across agency that have to work together to have families be strengthened and recognize that children are safer with their families than from their families when their families are supported. So it was really, for me, an eye-opening and very humbling experience on the fact that we had a same-age child, but our experiences were so different and the conditions within which we had to navigate those experiences and either overcome and thrive or continue to struggle and really wanted to be part of a child and family system. And so I'm just so thankful for even this conversation today.
I'll jump in here and I'm struck. I was going to start as a therapist as well in my career. It wasn't what I was meant to do. And the reason I love this question, Jaquay, about what is our origin story, if we think about our origin stories for why we do what we do, I think it can help us find what our purpose is. I think our purpose and our origin are very much connected. And I think we have to know our purpose in this work. We have to know why we're doing this, because we're all here on this webinar, I think, for one reason. We want to embark on an effort that can take us in a very different place. Sharonda used the best word I think we can use, which is the conditions that families face. How are we going to start addressing the underlying causes that lead to child welfare involvement? What are the conditions, not the families or the parents themselves, but the conditions that they face? And it's going to be difficult. I think it's going to be really difficult. I think it's going to take time. I think it's going to take years, if not decades, for us to see the kind of real progress that we want. And so to endure that, I think we want to stay grounded in our purpose. I think we all can go back to our origin story and find our purpose. And for me, I think it was pretty clear. It was in 2007. And I took a new job as an independent living case manager. I was working with Cody and Rafe, and it was Mandy and Micah and Raylin and Kristen. It was specific kids who I worked with and I built relationship with, and I really got to know their experience and I got to know their story. And these were kids that I was supposed to help them age out of foster care and become independent adults. And I had a bunch of realizations in that work that all happened really fast. One, independence shouldn't be the goal. We don't want 18-year-olds to be independent. We want them to be in community and relationship and family. But my job was to get them to be independent. I didn't think that was going to work. The other realization, which was the big one for me, that I think is what cemented for me that this is my purpose, which was I had this realization, or this belief for me anyway, that when we remove kids from their parents and place them in foster care, I believe we make a promise to their family. We make a promise to their family that we can do better for your children than you can at this moment. And on the day that they age out, when Cody, Micah, Rafe, Mandy, when they were going to turn 18 on that day, I felt like we failed in that promise. And that, honestly, that realization that I had 13 years ago has been what's been driving me. And it's cemented for me that my purpose is, for the last 13 years, it's been, how do we make the foster care experience the best it can be? How do we make it better? How do we improve it? What is foster care reform going to be? All of those kinds of things. And I've worked with some really amazing people and we've done some incredible work. I think we've really made an impact. I think we've done some really good work over those years here in North Carolina and others and many other places. Yet in North Carolina, we've seen a 50% increase of the number of kids in foster care over the last 5 years. So despite our great efforts and our desire to make foster care the best it can be, we're getting more foster care. You know, what I've realized this past year really that, and this has become my purpose tied to my origin story, is the goal isn't to make foster care the best it can be. The goal is to prevent it in the first place. And it doesn't mean that it's going to go away forever. It doesn't mean that we aren't going to need child protection and temporary foster care. I think we probably will. But I think that we need to focus our efforts on family. We need to live up to this promise that I think we've made to families. And I think we can. I think there's a lot that we can do to help strengthen families, to see the conditions that they face, to understand what's happening in community, and to redirect our efforts. I'm excited about that work. I know it's going to be difficult. There are a lot of people that are, I think, ready to move in that direction and excited to do this work. And I'm excited about it. I think that it's in part what the Institute for Family wants to contribute to, is this movement towards how do we see families in a way that can help us strengthen families and to Shronda's point, address conditions. I'm so thrilled for this conversation today and this group coming together and the work ahead of us. So stop there.
So I suppose I'm last. And I would say as to the why, to me, it couldn't be more simple. And it's that families matter. All families, not just those that look like mine, no matter how they're configured, no matter where they're from, family matters. It's where we get our sense of belonging. It is a vital connection for our well-being. And it's time we started acting like that. Because if we don't, we'll simply be on the wrong side of history and the wrong side of justice. And my origin story, I'm coming to understand, is really one in having my eyes opened to privilege I did not earn and privilege I'll never know what it's like to exist in the world without. And I was most directly confronted by that as a young 20-something-year-old student teacher who was working on the edge of the St. Regis Mohawk Reservation. And I got a sense then, in ways that I never would have imagined, how unfair conditions can be. And seeing families that were struggling with normal familial challenges, things that I had family members that struggled with and neighbors that struggled with, families that absolutely loved each other, treated completely differently. And this replicated itself and has and continues at every step of my career. When I worked with homeless and runaway youth in Newark, New Jersey, I saw the same thing play out again. And it's a destructive pattern that we've got to own and take on. You know, simply by being born Black, Brown, or Native American in this country, your family shouldn't have less of a chance to be together. You shouldn't be valued less. And if you're poor, you shouldn't have less of a chance to stay together either. I think we just have this critical moment to come together during a time of great division in the country around the one thing. I hope there's more than one. But one thing I know that we all have in common, and that's that we have families. And we should all coalesce around doing everything that we can to celebrate, support, strengthen, and acknowledge just how important family is to all of us.
Wow. That's really powerful stuff, guys. I am hearing this common theme of conditions and wanting to really understand those conditions and the things that our families we serve face. And so I'm also hearing a lot about what you guys learned earlier on in your careers, this theme of 20-something that you guys keep throwing around. And so I guess my hope for today is really that everyone who's in their 20-something moment realizes this earlier on so that they can do work with a very great impact.
I know the conversation ended quickly, but it continues in episode 2. In the meantime, take a moment to think about it. What is or will be your origin story or purpose for seeing this work differently? How will you approach this work differently? Now, join us in episode 2 so you can hear what myself, Sandra, and the rest of the panelists have to say about this conversation on why we need to advance a family well-being focus.